From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we begin our traditional Ghost to Ghost. Get ready with your spooky stories, my friends. Here's what's happening. What an unbelievable story. Vulnerabilities in brain implants used to treat Parkinson's disease could be hacked by cyber attackers and used to control people, according to scientists. A report by the Oxford Functional Neurosurgery Group and the cybersecurity company of Kaspersky claims that people's memories could be exploited by hackers and has called on cybersecurity companies, manufacturers, and healthcare companies to develop new technology to stop them. I thought we'd go to Lauren Weinstein on this one, our expert on the internet. Lauren, this is one of the most bizarre stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, and while there's a kernel of truth to this, it's also pushing pretty far into the science fiction realm in terms of current technology. It's interesting, though, when I first heard this story, I thought of an old movie called Terminal Man, which was one of Michael Crichton's early efforts, which was about a patient who had a brain implant that went wrong and made him basically become violent and berserk. So that was many, many years ago. So the situation with these implants is it's very similar to the vulnerabilities that have been found in some control and data links for pacemakers. These are being used for basic functions, for basic readouts of the health of the implants, to control rates of stimulation. In the case of
right.
In the case of a pacemaker, it's your heart rates. In case of this Parkinson's implant, it's different kinds of electrical stimulation. And certainly, you do not want people tampering with those settings. I mean, obviously, you can do people harm. If nothing else, you can prevent the implant from doing the good it's supposed to do. So it's not rocket science to secure these links. And what it suggests is sloppiness. People just really didn't think about it. You know, it's the same kind of thing that causes you to have default passwords on equipment you buy that never gets changed, and then hackers get in remotely and are looking at the baby through the baby camera. The part of the story that's pushing into the real science fiction realm right now is, you know, whether you could control people with it,
right,
whether you could read their memories, that kind of thing. These implants don't have those kinds of capabilities, and we do not at this time have the technology for those kinds of capabilities.
About the future? That's
well,
right. Go ahead.
There we go. It is certainly possible with the advances in neuroscience and the interfacing of computers to the human brain, which is advancing very rapidly, that at some point in the future, there will be the possibility of some kind of control, some kind of memory access. It's science fiction now, but we all know that tomorrow's science fiction can become tomorrow's reality.
I love it. Lauren, thanks, and hope you had a great Halloween. Now, chalk this story up at the water cooler as one of those bizarre stories. Listen to this. A would-be actor took a shockingly extreme step to improve his career by cutting off his own arm so that he could more easily pose as a war veteran, only to have a handful of small, modest parts to show for his extreme and bloody trouble. I'm not even going to mention his name. He claims to be bipolar. He cut off and cauterized his right arm 17 years ago while he was off his bipolar medications just to become a big actor. My God. He appeared, by the way, in Better Call Saul. France has launched a national investigation into the number of babies being born with missing arms or hands. Weeks after an initial inquiry closed, the first investigation began. After it emerged, more than a dozen children had been born with the condition in clusters in three French regions. It ended after health authorities failed to identify a common cause. President Donald Trump saying that he has now prepared to deploy as many as 15,000 troops to the Mexican border in anticipation of a migrant caravan that would press ahead with his planned executive order to end birthright citizenship as well. And also, Turkey has now given its first official statement on how it believes writer Jamil Khashoggi was killed, saying he was immediately strangled in the consulate and, of course, then dismembered. But first, let's check in with Dr. John Curtis on the caravan story and the troops. John, 15,000 troops. All these people, man, what's going to happen?
Well, guess what? That's more troops than we have deployed in Iraq.
Yes, now.
Yeah, and Syria. I mean, and also Afghanistan. So I think what you've got going right now is we've got an election, George, in 6 days. And Trump is, you know, racing around the country like he did in 2016, one rally after another. I mean, the man has, he has like an atomic sort of energy when he gets on the campaign trail. There's no question about it. But I think, you know, James Mattis, you know, said it best when he said, look, we have natural disasters of all type. We deploy army troops to wherever they're needed when the National Guard sort of runs out of, you know, personnel, we supply them. And that's what he's doing at the border. And basically the message is a very strong message that they're sending, saying we are going to defend our border, and whatever the caravans, the, you know, PR value to these caravans, and they shrink quite a bit, George. I mean, they start out at 7,000 to 8,000, and then they go down to 3,000 and 4,000, and then by the time they get to the border, there's like maybe, you know, 1,000 that are scattering.
Well,
and then,
let's
you know,
hope
ones,
so, John. Let's
the ones that
so.
Have money, they buy coyotes to get across. But very few will ever make it across this border right now. And I think it's a very powerful message that Trump is sending.
But why isn't Mexico simply stopping the caravan, saying, hey, folks, it's not going to happen?
They don't have the resources to stop anything in Mexico, and they don't in Central America either. They just don't have the personnel, the organization, the capacity to do anything. These are countries that are running in with essentially anarchy. These are ungoverned territories that have minimal control, large swaths of Central America and Mexico controlled by drug cartels. We've known that for years.
And John, the Khashoggi story just seems to get stranger and stranger and stranger. Now they strangled him immediately after denying everything and dismembered the guy. My gosh, where's this going to lead?
Well, I think where it's heading, George, I mean, now that this is coming out with Turkey, and I think that, you know, the Turks are really trying to be responsible about this because they know that the Saudis are blowing smoke and trying to really come up with any explanation that sort of, you know, has traction with the media. But, you know, they've changed their story so many times. First, he walked out of the embassy and never came back. Then they said that he got into some kind of a fist fight in the embassy and he was accidentally killed. Now, you know, with the Turkey story, much more consistent with what the media reports were, that it was a premeditated murder from the get-go, and they essentially used a bone saw to kind of dismember him.
Jeez.
And then carry him out in bags, basically. The Turks have demanded that they return Khashoggi, what's left, the Khashoggi's remains. They've gotten nothing back. The big story is the 18 Saudis that were flown in on private jets to Ataturk Airport in Istanbul, and then were present at the embassy when Khashoggi was essentially blindsided, ambushed at the embassy, and murdered. And so far, the Saudi government that says they're trying to be sincere about this is refusing to extradite the 18 Saudis to be charged in Turkey for murder. So I think the Saudis are still playing games. They haven't figured out yet that there are going to be consequences to this, and it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
By the way, one of the royals now wants to challenge the crown prince for leadership of Saudi Arabia. That's going to get sticky.
Very sticky because, I mean, he's really pretty much incarcerated and eliminated the opposition over the last 2 years. So I doubt very seriously. But the bottom line is Riyadh, as controlled by King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, have totally denied knowing anything about this operation, which makes it even more befuddling and confusing why they would make these stories up if they knew nothing about it. So, you know, we haven't heard the end of this story, George.
All right, thank you. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com is his website. Construction workers renovating an older building in Georgia traced themselves last week all the way down to a wall. They cracked it open and discovered an estimated 1,000 human teeth inside. It doesn't get any stranger than that. Talking about the strange, up next, Rosemary Ellen Guiley joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We will take your phone calls with Rosemary Ellen Guiley in a few minutes as well. Rosemary, of course, is a leading expert on the paranormal. She has researched, investigated, and written about the paranormal since 1983. Her extensive field work investigating hauntings, mysterious and sacred places, makes her a leading expert in the field. Some of her books include The Encyclopedia of Angels, The Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, Dream Messages from the Afterlife, Talking to the Dead, which she wrote with me. Her website is visionaryliving.com, and she's going to be with us this hour before we start Ghost to Ghost. Rosemary, welcome back.
Hi, George. Happy Halloween.
You too. Did you dress up at all?
Well, actually, I did. In fact, I've had several days of costumes. We spent about we go up to Salem every year, the weekend before Halloween, and we have a number of events there. We have balls and dinners and teas and rituals for the dead, and everyone has to have a costume. I mean, each event has to have a costume. So we were changing our costumes a lot in the past few days. And then tonight we just had a private event. It was a dinner and a seance. That's also a costume event. So, yes, I've had all sorts of alternate personalities out there for the past several days.
Give us a range of some of the costumes that you wore.
Well, because I do a lot of rituals for the dead and communication with the dead, and they're in seance kind of environments, I've gone for a Victorian look. And so I have variations on that, different Victorian-style outfits. However, for one of the balls, we had Louis XIV costumes, and those were rather elaborate.
Rosemary, let's talk about hauntings and what creates a haunting. What is the impetus for a haunting?
There are a lot of things that go into it. And first, there are events. Something happens that causes an energy of a person or an animal to remain behind after they cross the veil. And sometimes that can be a traumatic event, a sudden unexpected death, a violent end, an unhappy end, and residual energy gets left behind. If there's earth energy involved, in many cases, that's part of the scenario, there seems to be certain configurations of the composition of the dirt, of the contours of the landscape that help that energy stay in place as well. And then you have the living, because we participate in hauntings, which is one of the reasons why no two people necessarily experience a haunting the same way. And in fact, some people might experience nothing, while someone else might be very bothered by phenomena. So these are the three things that contribute to any particular haunting.
And what kind of entities do the haunting? I mean, we've talked about ghosts, demons, all kinds of things, but primarily, who does the haunting, or what does the haunting?
In most cases, it's the human dead, and animals also can haunt a place, too, after they cross over. And then we also have spirits who can come into haunted landscapes because of the energy. Some of them will masquerade as the human dead. Some of them are benign. They're not particularly malevolent. They're just taking advantage of the energy. Some of them are tricksters. And then we also have malevolent spirits as well that will come into hauntings. And that's particularly the case if there's been a lot of unhappy energy.
What do they want? Why do they haunt?
Well, in many cases, the haunting is non-intelligent. We run into this a lot. We call it residual energy, where impressions, somebody's energy, their impressions of their personality or activities that they did in a place, remain behind, just sort of like a weird psychic video or a psychic photograph. And so there really isn't any intelligence to interact with. It's just there in place doing the same thing over and over again. But sometimes the dead get stuck, and then they want the attention of the living. They're reaching out for help. They're trying to get reoriented and figure out what's going on with them. And with spirits who are seeking to engage with people, well, they have a variety of motives. And quite often it's on the trickster side. They're playing pranks, or they want to take energy from people by getting them to engage with them. In the case of malevolent spirits, many of them are out for harm.
The hauntings occur to a number of different people, but some people get haunted more than others. Why is that?
They certainly do, George, and I've seen this over the course of all my years of investigation. I think it has to do with human consciousness. There are some people who are just born with a bigger radar for this sort of interaction than other people. There's something in their energy field, or perhaps it's the way they think or feel, that is able to engage with unseen presences more easily. And in those cases, these people have lifelong experiences. They often start very early in life. A lot of kids have experiences anyway, but with the extreme experiencer, these happen, they continue throughout life, and they could include anything. Not necessarily ghosts. They could also involve seeing mysterious creatures or encountering them, having UFO activity. It really runs the gamut.
Would you say that demonic hauntings are on the uptick?
They certainly seem to be, just judging by reporting. And we only know what people report. And we've certainly had an emphasis on demonic hauntings in the media in the past few years, because they make exciting programs and exciting stories. But when people see things in the media that are happening to other people, they're often encouraged to come forward with their own stories as well. And so we've been seeing a rise in the reporting of those kinds of experiences. And in some cases, it's people innocently move to a location that's been tainted or polluted by some sort of negative energy, and there's something dormant there. And when they come in, then it gets activated. And in the right circumstances, something like a negative spirit can start acting out against them. So I think that in some cases, these experiences reflect the times. We've got a lot of chaos going on in the world. People feel unsettled about a lot of things economically, socially, politically. And these anxieties can create a negative energy field that also can contribute to the attraction of negative spirits.
I had a guest on last night who was talking about Frank Sumption and his Frank's Box. Remember, you and I were talking about that years ago. You use black mirrors to communicate with the dead. How does that work?
I love black mirrors. They're one of my favorite tools, and I have lots of ghost boxes as well, including some by Frank. But a black mirror is looks like a regular mirror, only it's solid black instead of silvery. And it becomes like a chalkboard or a blank slate that facilitates communication. If you gaze into a shiny black surface steadily, it can cause the physical eyes to fatigue and the psychic senses start to take over. And if you ask to communicate with spirits or the dead, then you can project your consciousness to, I call it a bridge in the astral realm, where contact can take place. This sort of tool has been used for thousands of years. You know, the Greeks raised this to a high art, communication with the dead and using reflective services to act as the tool. And I've been conducting workshops for years. People have had profound experiences. We've had manifestations during the seances as well, with apparitions and phenomena that happen actually in the room while people are mirror gazing. We've even had pet animals who crossed over show up.
And they just seem to be happening at will, don't they?
The communication, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, I think that it is possible to establish communication at will, on demand, so to speak, from our side. We don't have any guarantee of results. And here again, we have those wild cards of human consciousness and maybe barriers that people have internally that they struggle with, like, is this real? They start doubting themselves. We have the energy of place we're dealing with. And so in any given mirror workshop that Joe and I do, we have some people who don't seem to get very much and other people who get a great deal of contact experience with a lot of details and imagery. And this can help people deal with their grief, with questions that they have about the afterlife. It's very reassuring for many people because we all grieve those that we've lost.
We're going to come back in a moment with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. There's much more to talk with her about, but we'll also take your phone calls in the remaining half hour we have with her before we start Ghost to Ghost. Our special guest this hour, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, will take your calls with her as we talk about hauntings. Next hour, we begin Ghost to Ghost. Well, the tickets at Everett Washington, our March 23rd event, are going so quickly. They've opened up a new section for us. So jump on and buy your tickets and then just hold on to them because in a few months, March will be right around the corner and we'll have our live event. I'm really looking forward to it. And we do a meet and greet right after that event as well. How do you get your tickets? Very simple. Go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top of the homepage, all you got to do is click events, or you'll see that carousel reel on the highlight reel. They keep changing. One of those little buttons will have the Everett event. It'll take you straight to their website, historiceverettheater.org, and you can order your tickets that way. If you don't have a computer, and there are some people who don't, you can call to get your tickets at 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. And welcome back. We're back with Rosemary Ellen Guiley as we talk about hauntings, and we'll take your calls for the remaining portion of this half hour. Ghost to Ghost starts next hour here. John Zaffis, of course, talks a lot, Rosemary, about haunted objects such as furniture, jewelry, home decor, and things like that. What makes those haunted? Why does the being, the apparition, attach itself to those things?
I believe it's due to emotional energy. Throughout history, we've had rituals, techniques, and cases of spirits being able to lodge onto objects. Like they've been magnetized by them. And John and I have co-authored a couple of books together on some of his more dramatic cases. And in some cases, it might be the energy of the owner of an object. For example, if someone had a favorite ring and they wore it throughout their life and it absorbed a lot of the emotional energy mm-hmm. that the person had throughout life, then that energy can be picked up after death by whoever then acquires that object. Psychometry is the art of sensing things through the energy retained by objects. So the more we hold and use objects, the more they pick up our energy. And depending upon the composition, like metal retains energy better than plastic, for example, an object can become haunted. Spirits can also be drawn to objects, and we have a lot of spirits around us throughout life. Some of them are neutral, benevolent. We have guardian spirits. For people who've had unhappy lives or lives with a lot of chaos in them, negative spirits can be attracted to that. And what they do when they lodge onto an object is it enables them to stay in an environment and to draw energy that's generated by the emotions of people. And that feeds the spirit.
Why does this time period, the Halloween time period, Rosemary, seem to be the time period where hauntings are more prevalent and strange things happen?
Well, in Celtic lore, and even the Greeks and the Romans and the ancients had beliefs about when the veil between the worlds is thinnest. And for the Celts, it's this time of year. They called the end of summer Samhain. And it was usually celebrated at around November 1st. And so on the night before that, there were beliefs that this was the time when the dead could return to the world of the living, and the Lord of the Dead would come too. And it was a time of resentencing the dead. If you were good, you had another good term in the afterlife. If you were bad, you got another 12 months of unhappiness in the afterlife. And so customs developed, in addition to the celebration of the harvest and the end of summer, with feasts and dances and lots of food, you know, that there were also other customs related to the dead. People started wearing disguises to fool the spirits so mm-hmm. that they wouldn't follow them home, for example. They would leave food out for the dead to appease them so they wouldn't be bothered. And the Greeks and the Romans had festivals as well for the dead, not necessarily at the same time of the year. The Romans, for example, had a big festival in May called Lemuria that was oriented toward negative spirits of the dead, people who had become what they called evil ghosts or who had died without a surviving family, and they had nobody to look after their remembrances, and this would make them restless. So all of these things combined eventually led to the customs that we practice today. And when the Christian church began absorbing the pagan religions, they wisely saw that it's easier to graft old existing popular holidays onto the new ones. And so in Christianity, then we have All Saints Day and All Souls Day. That replaced the Samhain.
Are you considered a demonologist, Rosemary?
I've never called myself that, although I've studied a lot of demonology.
You sure have.
I did do an encyclopedia of demons and demonology, and of course, John and I have worked on a lot of cases together. So I guess you could say that being a demonologist is part of the mix, but I don't specialize in that.
Let's go to the calls. Justin in Holt, Michigan. You're on with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Justin, go ahead.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Rosemary.
Hi there.
Got a kind of a story here for you.
Sure.
And I'm hoping to actually, I just wanted to tell Rosemary, I really respect the things you were mentioning earlier about the Black Mirrors. I've read a lot about that and occult works. That those methods actually with the Black Mirrors, Solomon's Magic, he's on YouTube. Very, very well respected the method. So I, when I was younger, about 18, I had a friend who saw shadow people. He was very afraid of something, these shadows he would tell me about. He'd tell me he'd hear voices whispering to him. And, you know, this guy would have nightlights all over his house. And, you know, he showed me one morning, you know, these shadows that would dart across his room, and I actually could see these figures that were darting in his room. And, you know, sometimes people will say with particular people that are seeing you know, spirits and things that, you know, could drugs or other things be a cause, or alcohol, but this man was very successful in his life, did a carpentry business and you know, worked full-time, never did any drugs or anything, and short story short, about, I'd say about maybe 7 months ago, I started seeing these figures. They're black. You know, they don't really seem to, I can't really, you know, they don't seem to have a face or anything. They're mm-hmm. just black. Sometimes they have a maybe a mask or...
Do they have like a human body shape to it?
Yes, they do.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They, you know, I've seen, which I believe was a demon. You know, these things, they seem to be attracted to like negativity almost is what I first thought. But I'm not so sure. I think they're created by energy. But they always seem to be lurking in, like, corners, just like my friend would see. They don't speak to me or anything, but, you know, I see them. They're, you know, I might see two, three, four of them in a room.
Have they ever tried to lunge at you, Justin, or anything like that?
Yes. So I had a girlfriend a few months ago. She's part of one of the Native American tribes here in Michigan. Her family is very strongly Native American, and I've seen, you know, spirits. I think they're Native American, you know, the spirits that are guardian spirits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen those around, and I've talked to, like, the medicine man in the tribe, and he told me kind of that these spirits come from other dimensions. They've had in their ceremonies, they've there are certain people, they have a connection. Some of these people might have mental illness, and I don't want to have that taken wrong, but he says that they're more in touch. They're more in tune with these other dimensions where these things are coming from.
A little more sensitive, I think, than most people.
Yeah, a little more sensitive. And anyways, when you were asking about Lungeon, I was with my girlfriend's mother at the time. And I watched two of these things. She actually told me there. She called me. I was very in with. I'm very connected to the Native American. The medicine and using sage. Interesting thing is they are very afraid of sage for some reason. They
That's
will
true.
Leave
they,
the environment.
That and when you burn it, they just seem to disappear.
Yeah. Yeah, they will not go through windows, though. I don't know why. They will not go through walls, windows. You actually have to open a door up for them to go through.
Really? Let's bring Rosemary in for a second here, Justin, as well. Rosemary, it sounds like these are kind of demonic, but, he hasn't been hurt by them.
Well, shadow people, I've done quite a bit of study on shadow people, and what Justin is describing is very characteristic of a lot of their activity. I believe them to be intelligent entities. Some of them are neutral. They're just there. They're occupying a place where they are able to manifest because they're drawing energy from something, and sometimes it's the land. Sometimes they are attracted to people, and Justin's quite right when he comments that some people who've experienced illness or are going through a bad emotional time, entities will be attracted to that energy, and that's what they feed off of. Some of them are aggressive, and they will attack people. Some people just see them. They move into a place. The beings are already there. They're occupying the land that the building was built on, the home was built on, and they slide around. They manifest at night. Turning the lights on will sometimes keep them away. Many of them don't like strong scents like sage or incense, and others, those sorts of things don't bother them, and they're going to hang around anyway. So they do run the gamut from neutral to aggressive. I've had a few people, very few people, in the many cases I've documented, say that they feel that these beings are protecting spirits and that they're actually benevolent. In those cases, the entities seem to be attached to people individually and follow them from place to place.
Let's go to Lisa in Seattle, Washington next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, this is so interesting. The man that just spoke, that happened to me.
Oh, boy.
People with a human form, but it looks like they have black robes on. They don't have face. And
they look like those. Did you ever see the movies, Lisa, A Ghost with Patrick Swayze, Whoopi Goldberg, Demi Moore? Remember those creatures that would like come out of the gutter and the sewers?
I remember that, but I'm telling you what I saw. I'm sitting in my front room one night, and I had the light on, and he's right out of the corner of your eye. And that's the first time I saw one manifest like that. It walked across my dining room. I'm in the front room, walked across my dining room. And you talking about scared. My husband worked at night, so I was home alone with the little babies. So, man, I was scared out of my gourd. So what I did, I, of course, jumped in the bed and put the kids in the bed with me like I'm, you know. But then about 2 hours later, I think it was a spirit of death, too, or warning. They called me and said my husband had a heart attack at work.
Jeez.
He might have died, but they brought him back because he doesn't know what happened. He fell out, felt sick. Went somewhere isolated, and somebody stumbled up on him, and he was out. He doesn't know what happened. All I'm saying is, right after that black thing walked across my house, then another time, we lived in a house in the South. Nobody would live in that house, but our house burnt down, and it was a nice house. People had been inhabiting it. But that house we moved in, nobody lived there. It was the weirdest house, but we had nowhere else to stay because our house had burned. And at night, we had pumps because this was the country. And something would come down those stairs walking. You could hear them walking.
You
nobody
hear
lived
it.
Upstairs.
Oh.
That house had been flooded out because they used to get 30-foot flood water in the area. And that house was so raggedy, but we had nowhere else. And that thing would walk down the stairs. You could hear it step. by step. We never saw anything because, you know, at night you don't have night lights. You're just in the dark. It would go to the pump. Now, this was a pump that as soon as you pumped it, it was right outside the back porch. As soon as you would pump it, water would just get to flowing. It was one of the few pumps we had. Some of them you have to prime and put water in them. This one, as soon as you touched the handle, water would come out. That thing would sit out there and pump that pump, but nothing would ever come out. No water came out. And because our mother and father knew about these spirits and stuff, and my mother was born on an Indian reservation, my father knew about Natives. And what happened, they didn't fear it. They would just bind it and rebuke it in the name of Jesus. But they didn't want to fear us because they knew we kids wouldn't live in that house. And we had to wait till they built the other house. So at any rate, they wouldn't say anything. They didn't act afraid. And when we would talk about it, they would say, oh, that's nothing. See, because they knew if we got a hold to that, that's a spirit. We wouldn't have stayed in
it. Oh, you'd be long gone. We're almost out of time here, Lisa and Rosemary. But it seems these entities are everywhere, huh, Rosemary?
They really are. I think they're actually more prevalent than what we would call ghosts, you know, the residues of humans who have passed over. And they're in place. They exist on the landscape, and they haunt homes. They can attach to people and follow them around. They will often take human shape and look like they're wearing robes or coats, sometimes with hats. And they're very intelligent. Some of them will interact with people, and they have a variety of motives. Some of them won't bother people. They're just there. That's scary enough. And others will take action against people.
Rosemary, enjoy yourself until the next time we get together. Her website, visionaryliving.com. You can read up all about those black mirrors on her website as well.